Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of my podcast. We have a very special guest today joining all the way from Thailand. We got Adam Jang of Yeti Wahala. Hi, Adam.
Hey man, thanks for having me on your show.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing okay, brother. I'm doing okay. Thank you for setting this at an appropriate time and doing it at the Rockstar 9 a.m., which is 12 p.m. for everybody else. much appreciate it.
I hope you had some coffee before this.
Absolutely not. So we'll see how this goes.
Right. So Adam, how has it been? I know you're kind of stuck in Thailand. So how has it been with this, all this, you know, pandemic and all this nonsense happening?
Surprisingly, it's been okay for me because up until the last 3 months, we were still playing through the pandemic. We were still having performances. We were still playing about three nights a week through Bangkok and Pattaya and Rayong, which is like a small beach area. Like, here's Bangkok and up this way is Pattaya and Rayong. And we were doing fine. There were some restrictions, obviously. The tourism isn't very strong, but you could play in local areas for Thai people and people who live here. You just couldn't play the bigger venues, and there was no real promoters putting on big festivals. There was no, you know, tourists coming into the expat bars, so you're playing to far less people. Right. But we were still getting paid. We were making relatively the same amount that we would playing locally here in Bangkok. I'm not really a local guy. Like, I do a lot of tours and stuff. So right. Usually I play my own music, and I only got to do an hour to maybe an hour and a half per show around these places, sometimes a 45. But since the pandemic and landing in Bangkok, we had to be a local band, and we had to play a lot of covers. We had to play for sometimes up to 3 hours in right. some of these places with a break, right, in there. So it was definitely a different experience. It was a humbling experience. I'm not really used to a drunk old guy coming up to me from England and requesting that he get to play my guitar and sing a song on stage. Like, I don't really do that.
Right.
But people, that's the standard norm in Bangkok. That's what happens a lot. And they let people do that. So that was a bit of an adjustment, but for the most part, it was okay because we could play still. We could still make some money.
Right. Do you still get to play some of the originals in these sets?
Yeah. We sneak them in. Sometimes we're requested not to, right. but we just do it, and just like, you don't announce it. I'm not famous anyways. Maybe it's like a B-side Oasis song or something like that, and no one cares, so it's fine. Right. There were a couple of places that let us do whatever we wanted, but unfortunately, recently, since the most recent lockdown, they've gone out of business. So there's no point even plugging their venue right. here right now. Right. So yeah,
I mean, at least you guys have something to do, because like the musicians in the Philippines, there's basically nothing for them to do. There's no shows, no bars. Even like, you cannot do like an acoustic set where you just play your guitar. Even that's not allowed yet. So
it's really.
That's
unfortunate.
Right now we cannot even like go in and eat. It's just only takeout. So it's like, and we've been in this lockdown for like 1.5 years already. So
I don't know how people are surviving. That's crazy, man.
Right. Yeah. I feel for the musicians and, you know, people who are in the industry, right? All the sound guys, lighting guys, staging guys, and all these people. I don't know what they're doing, right? How they're surviving.
Yeah. No idea. It's pretty brutal.
So I got to know about Yeti, I think probably like a year back or even earlier. Okay. And it was so surprising. Like, I couldn't figure out, like, is this guy a Japanese guy, or is he Native American guy, because you had you have all these things like mix up, and you sometimes like you're part of the Black Eyed Peas, you know.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your story, because I know the band was formed in Canada, but can you tell me a little bit your journey? Maybe start with your childhood. Tell me a little bit about your early childhood.
Okay, so basically, I'm from Canada, and I was born in Canada. My parents were also born in Canada, so I'm a third generation Chinese guy, right? My grandparents were from Macau, which is like basically it's China, right? So they came over around World War II because they didn't want to get killed by a bunch of Japanese guys. So I was born in Vancouver, BC, Canada, which is the West Coast. I went to a privileged white kid school, and I was not well. I was not healthy. I had a lot of problems. I had like eczema, like all over my face and shit, right? So it was like, it was a rough go, and I was sick all the time. I was being in the rich kid school. I got put into all these extra classes that I didn't want to do. And one of them was called music, right?
Right.
Because I didn't want to go into band class and learn to play saxophone. I at the age of six, I had to be a good little Chinese boy and learn to play fucking piano like they all do, right? So I was sick of that stuff by then. I didn't want to read music. I didn't want to do any of that stuff. And frankly, playing music was not fun. I took no joy whatsoever in playing piano and doing that kind of stuff. So yeah, and it was very difficult for me. I faked my way through all of the piano lessons. I never learned to read music. I would just look at where the woman's hands were that was teaching me, and I would play at least 50 to 60% of what she showed me. So that's it. So it just got me through to the next point, right? I would even do the recitals in front of a large audience in front of a church or something. And I couldn't read the freaking thing. I just like memorized it, and I would make it up halfway through. So you can tell, like, boner, da 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 da, right? It would be incoherent in certain spots, but that's how I got through music. So I was 12 in the music class. We would play with like wood blocks and shit. It was like for the kids that were too stupid to get into band class. That's where they put me. So the last part of the year, we got to play guitar, and that was a little more fun, but again, I sucked at it, but I learned some basic chords. Now we fast forward a little bit, and like, you know, I played like hockey, and I did all the normal stuff in Canada that you do. I used to take gasoline out of cars and put them into bottles and then light it on fire and go throw it somewhere, right? That's just what we do in Canada. It's not a delinquent thing. This is just the normal thing that Canadian boys do, right? We go, you know, get cigarettes and get high off the cigarettes, because, you know, when you're small and you smoke a cigarette, it fucks you up. We would huff Listerine, and we would try all these different things, like put Listerine through bread to try to filter out all the crap, so you could just get the alcohol at the end. We would try to drink that, and we get sick and puke and go to the hospital. You know, like stupid stuff like that, right? Marijuana, weed was accessible. It was everywhere. And this is before it was legal. It's legal now, right? So when I was 14, we started really smoking weed. Now I'm in high school, and I know a little bit of guitar. The passion of wanting to play guitar came when I was about 12 years old, but I never spoke about it because I didn't really have the confidence, because I was fucked up, right? I was all sick. I had all this shit on my face. I was a fucked up guy, right? And then we're playing hockey, and one day my friend brings in AC/DC Back in Black, and we're listening. It's like, it's cool, right? And what we would do during hockey is we would listen to like these old 70s, 80s bands, sometimes 90s bands, right? And get stoked up in the dressing room and go play. And before then, when I was a little kid, before the internet and all this other stuff, this all correlates. Don't worry. We're jumping around, but we'll get back to it. Don't worry. So when I was a kid, there was an episode of The Simpsons. I forgot what the episode was. And it played Highway to Hell at the very end of it for like 6 seconds. It was just like the highway to hell. and that was it. But that was the moment where I was like, I didn't know what the band was. I didn't know what the song was. I didn't know what a fucking electric guitar was. I didn't know nothing, but I was like, this is awesome. And it took me like 8 months to find the rerun to listen to that again. Because again, this is like no internet, I didn't have a CD player, right? And this is when cassettes were still there. I didn't know what to ask for or anything like that. I just thought it was a really cool thing. So that was the first time I was touched by AC/DC before I played guitar when I was like 6 years old. Then the second time was when I was like 12 and we're in the hockey in the dressing room and we're listening to Back in Black. I'm like, this is fucking awesome. And as everyone knows, AC/DC had two singers, right? Bon Scott up until 1979 when he died, his last work was Highway to Hell. And then Brian Johnson, 1980, Back in Black. So those were the two albums. And to this day, those two albums have shaped my entire career and life. Completely. I would not be who I am today at all if those two things were never created. And that was 8 years, 8 and 9 years before I was born, were those fucking albums released and shit, right? So like that's some incredible stuff, right? Bon Scott was dead long before I was even born, which is pretty cool. So all this happened, and the want of playing guitar was incredibly high. So I learned to play for a year when I was 12. I didn't have a guitar at home. And I really wanted to do it, but I couldn't ask for it because I was fucked up. So what I would do is I would, you know, let's try to take a piece of paper here, right? So like I would take a piece of Remax paper, which is like this, right? It's like about that size. And I would draw six strings on the fucking thing. And I would get my mom to buy me a guitar player magazine thing. Just to say that I was reading it, but I wasn't. I was learning tablature. And, you know, I wasn't playing it the right way, right? I was like, you know, I played it upside down because everyone knows like the high string here is actually the low string in tablature, right? So I just assumed that it was the same as a guitar physically is. So I learned to go like this and I didn't know what I was doing. I was just like, okay, it would be here, it would be here, it would be here, it would be here. Like one of my friends taught me how to read it. Like you just said, like the number that they put on the fret corresponds to where your finger goes and what fret number, right? So so I figured all that stuff out. And these are songs like Free Bird and, you know, like Cocaine by Clapton and all this other stuff, right? Like Jimi Hendrix and all this other stuff, right? No AC/DC tabs because I only had one fucking magazine. They didn't give, right? So I was stuck with whatever this was. Fast forward to my 16th birthday, and I've just started getting really heavy into weed and drinking. And I get this guitar. And suddenly, and I'm still fucked up. I still look fucked up and stuff, right? I get this guitar, and within a month, I could play solos. I couldn't shred, but I could do a good blues guitar solo because that's what was on my thing there. And I put in must have been 18 to 20 hours a day into just learning to do this because I didn't know what chords were. I couldn't figure that out. I couldn't play the power chord or the full bar chord or a power chord until someone showed me a couple months later.
So what was that first guitar?
It was an LTD M50. It's like the cheap Kirk Hammett guitar. It's a double fat Strat, and it didn't have EMGs. It was like it was like cheap Seymour Duncan ones. It was the cheapest Seymour Duncan pickups you could get on there, and it was a little Marshall MG 10 or 15 watt amp. I forgot what it was, and you know, which is a great little piece. I love those. So I started playing. And within, you know, being able to do a solo, I got into a band in high school really quickly.
Right.
And I guess through sweating and perhaps praising Satan or something, my skin disease went away.
Right.
I couldn't get girls before because I had a skin disease. So I fucking I started getting really heavy into weed, really heavy into drinking, even more so than right before I played guitar, right? I was fucked up all the time from 16. And I learned to play, and I got the hottest Japanese slutty girl in the school as my girlfriend. And immediately I went from like weird kid who had like two or three friends to cooler than the fucking cool kids in school. Cause now I was in a band and I could play in bars and get drunk and shit with people who were 25.
Right.
So there was this big drop off of my high school friends. I never made more friends after that point from that were my age from high school and my peers. I didn't have a normal life ever, but that point of my life, there was a big disconnect from my social friends that I had before. And then things started picking up, things were good. Then, you know, as it was then, like as the music scene was then, the music industry was then, it was not based off of algorithmic numbers. It was not based off of how many fake people do you have on YouTube? How many fake subscribers do you have? This, like, how many bots did you pay for on Instagram? Right? It wasn't, right. It wasn't based on that. It wasn't based on how, being a, I forgot what they, an influencer. It wasn't based on that. It was about, can you play? Can you bring some people to this bar so that the bar makes money and the bar will give you a percentage of how much, you know, I'll give you a fair amount of money for doing that. And that was the trade. That's how it worked, right? Even up on the huge scale, like Aerosmith and all those guys, it's how it worked. It was like based on ticket sales and shit. Wasn't based on any kind of fluctuation of an algorithm. So I was doing all right. I was actually making decent cash back then, right? And like, you know, for a 16-year-old kid, it was enough. I started, you know, then I got in trouble with my family because I was with this really slutty girl, and my dad and I fought, and we didn't speak to each other for a number of years. I moved out, and I was, you know, after I finished high school, my girlfriend broke up with me because, you know, that she just sucked. Everyone has one of those, right? It was like the first real breakup, right? This is the first woman to fuck me and love me after being a monster for so long in my life, right? So she's gone now, right? Now I got into real hard drugs. Now I'm doing like coke and E, and I'm just like, I'm popping everything. If you give me a dentist cup full of pills, I don't even give a fuck what it is. I'd eat it at the time, right? And I was like, all right, let's go. So I'm in absolute super party destruction mode, and I'm playing in different bands, making bands with people, not being a cover band, because I never really learned to play other people's songs properly. Because I was like, immediately from when I picked up the guitar, I didn't know what I was doing, and I could make my own shit up. And then I would join, you know, I'd make original songs with other people, because in that part of the world, the idea is not to become a cover band to make money like it is in like Thailand, for example. That's why everyone does that here, right? The idea is to be a big rock star, make your own stuff, make your own shit, and have other motherfuckers have to cover you. Our goal was like the ultimate thing. So I never spent time up until this year really trying to learn other people's songs. And I'm 33 years old now. This is 17 years down the line. And from doing so, I was able to play around the world. But let's get back to it a little bit first. So I'm in college. I drop out of college because I'm like, fuck this. This is stupid. I'm 19. I want to be a rock star. I put up a Craigslist thing. And this is just when the internet's really starting to be a tool for musicians. And it was like when Craigslist was a thing. Craigslist, like you could get hookers and fucking buy guitars off of Craigslist at the time. That was it. So I was like, oh, like, sweet, right? So I put myself up around the world. I made a little crappy demo with my laptop back then, but it was a very crude, pixelated, bad looking laptop. So I put that up of how I could play, and I got a gig, and it was for a band in Portland, Oregon. And they took me on tour and went from Oregon all the way down to Cali, to California, went LA and all that, and went back up. And that was my first big tour. I got kicked off of that tour halfway through because I asked for my money, because the guy who ran the thing kept on telling me he would pay me, but he never did. He just kept on giving me a bucket of chicken and a Coke. And that's what I lived off of for a month. And that was my first tour, right? Never paid me, ripped me off, gave me a bunch of chicken and a Coke. And that was fine, whatever. Came back to Canada, went and played from Vancouver to Toronto a bunch of times. Made my own band, did all these different things. It wasn't Yeti, it was something else, right? Made a couple blues bands in Toronto, did all these different fucking things. All of these things kept failing because the musicians that I was working with, you know, they were only in it for a short while. It was always a rotating door. It's a mercenary kind of situation, and it still is for many bands. Unless you know, grow together and you decide to make this thing together, someone fucks off and then your band's fucked,
right?
So I caught on to this, and I was like, okay, well, I made Yeti. 2012 comes up. This is years after all that shit happened, right? And now I'm at the point where I can sing and I can play, I can do this at a pro level now, and I want to go and take this outside of Canada. I want to take this and be the big dog, not be the cover guy. I want to be the big fucking dog. So I'm like, okay, how do we do this? Let's go to Australia. So we go all the way to Australia. I booked my own tour. I'm like, fuck, because, like, you know, no one else wanted to book me, no one knows me, I'm not famous. So my two options are, I either do it myself or I don't do it at all. And most people that I know, the people that I met over that amount of time, almost 8 years at that point, of all the musicians, chose to not do it at all. And I thought that was fucked up. So I take a risk. I roll the dice. I go to Australia. I didn't make any money. I lost $1,000 on that tour. And
Adam, just to ask you, so all your guitar playing and, you know, songwriting and all this, so who did you look up to? Like,
Angus Young. Angus Young, 100%. For guitar playing, it's none of the Shredder guys. I got into that way, way, way later. But Angus Young, right. / because he looked cool. Right? I got a poster back there. Really, that was it. It was Angus Young. That was the guy, right? Like, I'm not a guy who ventures off and tries to find different things. I find something and I stick with it and I like it. When I find something that I like, I stick with it. I'm like incredibly committed to that. I'll look into it as deeply as possible. And you give me something else, if I don't like it as much of it as that, I don't really care. Like the two biggest bands that had an influence on me, maybe not musically, but just an influence on my life, is AC/DC and then Guns N' Roses down there, right? So that was, and as a singer, that's different, because as a singer, I would learn to sing by driving in my car because I was too fucking loud to be able to sing in my home, right? And so I would listen, I would get cassette tapes and stuff because I was too poor to be able to buy CDs because I spent all the money on drugs. So I would go to the, what they call the Salvation Army, which is like the used clothing place in Canada. And sometimes they have cassette tapes that no one wants for like a dollar. So I would go through here and I would look for bands that I maybe recognized the name of, but didn't really listen to them. So for example, Skid Row, right? Didn't listen to them at the time, but Sebastian Bach is definitely, in my opinion, one of the greatest singers of heavy metal of that era. So I learned to sing from Sebastian Bach. My teachers were these ancient relics called cassettes. That took me back in time. I had a 92 Toyota Corolla. Okay, it was a 1992 Toyota Corolla. And that was my time machine. I could take these tapes, which were lessons, pop them in, and try to sing like that. And I would drive around. And, you know, sometimes I got fucked when I bought the tape, right? Because it's like, you know, it's a tape. It's been played a million times. It sounds like shit after a while, right? So and it goes, bleh, 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 and it's not even usable. So, you know, I had, you know, I knew ACDs. So I got all those. I got, you know, some Skid Row. I got the Guns N' Roses stuff. And then I found like the Black Crows and stuff. I don't listen to that. But like it's, but that singer was really good.
Right.
And I've had like Deep Purple, White Snake, like early White Snake, early David Coverdale stuff when it was a blues band, not the Here I Go Again synth crap, right? But you know, right. when it was a Dirty Guy band, right? That was awesome. And those guys, and like those were really influential in terms of my voice and how I learned to sing like that. But in terms of like writing and everything, no, like not even, I don't even try to emulate AC/DC. If you know, my it's my favorite band in the world, but if you look at an AC/DC set of lyrics, it's written like Dr. Seuss.
Right.
It's like, I will not go, I do not like them Sam I Am, I do not like them Green Eggs and Ham, right? Like, you know, that's how it is.
But it's funny how it really works for them, right? I think that doesn't work for anybody else, but no, for them, it really works, right?
Yeah, it's perfect for them. It's perfect for AC/DC. And again, it's my favorite band. It's perfect rock. But I don't, I feel really silly trying to write like that. And like, you know, I at a point when I was younger, I tried to write like that. And the songs are terrible.
Right. And what's your idea that all these albums that you're mentioning, and we still listen to them and they're still relevant, and these are like 30 years old, some albums like 40 years old, like, you know, it's, I think most of the albums is more than 25 years old now, right? So all these albums are still relevant, and it's so amazing, right? We still listen to them, and even new people, new generation can listen to them, and it's still same feeling, right?
Yeah. It's they're classic albums from a time when musicians were musicians.
Right.
If that makes sense. Now musicians are influencers first. They'll spend more time on taking selfies of themselves and trying to grow their Instagram fan base than learning their craft. None of them put through the ringer. That's
right. You mentioned about this number of followers and, you know, fake followers and all these, because I always get these messages from people, especially like, I think they're coming from like Pakistan or somewhere, and then they'll say, oh, I can get you this number of followers, and you know, but I'm asking them, why don't you have, like, you know, you only have like 100 followers on your profile. So why aren't you using that strategy, right? Same thing, if you know how to do it.
Or it's like they have 100,000 followers and on their post they have like 200,000 likes, but only one or two actual comments and people engaging in the post. So it's bullshit. So you use the comment section to judge how full of shit the guy is. Right. That's what I like to do. Right. If it's less than, like, you know, if he has thousands and thousands of followers and he's got a couple of comments on his shit, then no one's really paying attention to that. That's useless. That's a fucking bullshit fucking thing right there. And some of these guys, like, I forgot what label it was, but it was an indie label. And they were trying to bully their way through, and they would say mean things to people applying to their label. Why are you trying to advertise your band on such a big page? And I looked at it, and it was the same kind of bullshit. They were buying followers and, you know, no engagement or any of that stuff. And they were acting as if they really were a legit powerful force, and that people are lucky to be able to talk to them. That's the dangerous part of what's going on now, because like now you got a guy who can actually, who's actually like making other people not just feel bad, but could affect their business by being this dick like this, right? You see, it devalues what we do when right. people do this. And I think that's annoying. At the same time, there's other ways to do that. Like if you have the money and you just want exposure, there are ways to do that that are real. Right? You could pay an actual promotion company to actually get people to, like, a team of people to do this shit for you all day. And right. that will work. Like, that are not bots, right? You can do that. You can pay for actual ads that go out to be seen by real people. But because of the shocking amount of bots that there are now, do ads really do anything? That's the question, I think, because there's so, I would definitely safely say there's more ads than there are real profiles now. So, well, more bots than there are real profiles now. So if you make an ad and you put that out, who's looking at that? Is that a person or is that just a robot algorithm now at this point? So I'm really wary about that, right? I haven't run an ad on Instagram ever. And I ran a couple of ads last year on Facebook and I noticed no one would comment on it. No one would, like, maybe one or two, right? And I would get like 700 to 1200 people pressing like on this thing for $5, but none of them, like, it seemed really strange. And I was in Thailand because it was just when the pandemic started and I wanted to apply to some festivals. So I wanted to boost up my page a little bit and I wanted to do it the right way. So I ran the boost campaign and I didn't really get any real results. So that's a big concern with this. Like, I'm not quite sure how you're supposed to screen that. Like, I'm not entirely sure, but it seems like it could be a big problem later on.
Yeah. So Adam, you actually started telling me the story of you went to Australia with your band. So this is Yeti, right?
Yes.
This is already Yeti. So yes. First of all, when I hear Yeti, that was actually your previous name. You actually changed it to Yeti Wahal, right?
Yes, I had to.
So Yeti is like, when I hear Yeti, this is like the Asian Bigfoot, right?
Essentially. it's the Canadian Bigfoot, because that's where Bigfoot's from.
Right.
But he's in this situation, he's an Asian guy.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So, that was a good tour. That was a fun time. And then later on, after like that tour failed, but I had a good time. And then I came back to Vancouver for a year because I thought maybe that would have raised my booking value. Mm. Maybe that doing an outside thing, but it didn't do anything. So I decided to go to Asia. And then I went to Vietnam as the first one. And again, I put out Craigslist ads everywhere. And I was just like looking for a booker, doing all this kind of stuff. I didn't actually post in Vietnam. I posted in Singapore and Japan and all these like first world Asian countries, because I had no intention of playing in the third world. I assumed that it was like huts and shit, like from Apocalypse Now. I was uneducated in what the third world really is and developing countries. I had no idea.
Right.
So I get over, some guy tells me, hey, I'll come down, you come down here, play in Vietnam, I'll hook you up in all these places, I'll organize your tour. I was like, okay, great. Right. Figured this guy's either going to be legit or he's going to cut my fingers off and send them back to my family and try to get them to pay for me to come back. Right. So I get down there expecting the worst. And on the first day, he picks me up. I get go back to the shittiest hotel that was there because he bought the hotel. It was the shittiest one that you could possibly get for like $6 or $7. And I slept for 4 hours, went to the vice prime minister of Vietnam for his birthday party. We played his party. He sits me down at this table full of hookers with all this stuff, says, you can pick anyone you want. I picked a bunch of them. he gives me like all this weird booze, right? Like this strange liquor I've never seen before. It was like fortified wine, tasted like shit, but I drank it. played, fucked all the hookers back at my hotel. I wake up the next day covered in puke and pussy juice. And it's just like, it's like the most, just my beard was like just soaked in pussy juice. It was disgusting. Right. And I was just like, oh, cool. And I wake up to the manager, booker guy, yelling at me from down, says, "Hey man, hey Adam man, hey, you have to come down here, man." And I'm like, oh, all right, okay. So I get dressed, I leave them all the girls in the room, and I come down there right in my shorts. And I'm like, what the fuck do you want? I'm like, let's go get pho, so we get noodles. And like, all right, right. So we go and eat noodles and shit. And I left them all up there, and I lived with them for a couple of days. So like that was my first day in Vietnam. And things started opening up. We started playing. We played a New Year's show. To get a New Year's show in Canada, it's you have to book a year and ahead in advance, and it's really tough. Everyone wants that show, but we got it, and it was a huge packed audience. So my value was raised up from being from somewhere else and being able to sing in English without having with having an English accent, well, Canadian accent. Singing these songs, right? Because they think American music is cool, but it all sounds like they're sung with a Vietnamese accent, right? So it's like it's different. So my value was up, and I started playing all these bigger shows. I was playing to like 500 people a night. I was being paid a couple hundred dollars just for myself a night, and this is like 15 shows. So I made a good amount of money. In that short amount of time, I made more money in that one tour in a couple of weeks than I made in my entire professional career back home, which was pretty fucked up, right? And like, I was a struggling musician. I had to fucking sell weed and stuff when I was back home and do all these other different things, right? To just barely make it. I did landscaping and all this other fucking stupid stuff that was just physically tiring. For years to support being able to do music. Whereas when I went over to Asia, it was the music is my job. I'm able to pay my bills with it. And to this day, I'm able to pay my bills with it and stuff. Then I went to Thailand, went to Japan, and I built a little circuit from Vietnam to Thailand to Japan. I played a couple other little places in between, like Cambodia, but nothing happened. Never went over to the Philippines because I couldn't get solid bookings there. And then that went well, and so I decided I'll make a booking company out of this a couple years ago to be able to get some more residual income. And then I'm really making money at that point, because I was like, all right, so bands from America would come in who see Japan as this mystical land, right? And they wanted to go and play there, so I set them up on tour there. Some of them want to go and do Thailand and Vietnam as well, just to see what it's like. And they had a good time and they paid me handsomely. So then I was able to not do anything. I could just only play music, play whatever I wanted to, because I would just tour around at the time. I wasn't playing locally. And I would be making, I could spend money on things like social media campaigns if I wanted to. I could hire better photographers, hire better video crews, and things were okay. Then COVID hit and just wiped out that residual income. Just gone, right? 80% of the venues that we booked in Japan went under. They don't exist anymore. Like they didn't just like put up a closed sign like they do in Thailand and turn it back around to open when it's open. Like they got, like the business is gone. They liquidated all their shit. So things are different now for that. So I'm trying to rebuild that in the next couple of years while doing these other things. What Asia did for me though, doing all that stuff, is because I'm never a guy who's just going to be happy with what he has. I want more. I'm not greedy, but in terms of success, I want more. In terms of money, I don't give a shit, but I want to be well known in other places of the world. So through doing that booking company, through doing all these tours in Asia, through making many, many videos and stuff of the large crowds I was playing to, I got the attention of people in America, in Spain, and in England. And these are all people who do run booking companies of their own.
Yeah.
And some of them wanted me to book their artists. And again, this is before COVID hit, right? And this is, they wanted me to book their artists. In return, they book me into bigger venues. So that was the way that I found around this, the hurdle that is the music industry. Because, like, you know, you're a local band, no one knows you. What do you do, right? You have to take a risk. You have to take several risks, and most of them won't pay off. But then you got to figure out, okay, what else can I offer to get what these other guys have? What do they want? I found Japan. So I was like, okay, I have that as a thing, right? And I had the other two countries, Vietnam, Thailand, to be able to sell not only a small set of shows, I could sell you a fucking multi-country tour now. And then being someone who doesn't give a shit about the money aspect of it, it's nice to have money. I like money, but I don't, like, I don't really do it just because of that, right? You trade that service for the same service elsewhere that you cannot get yourself. So for example, Spain, England, America, right? And by doing that, I've set up the next couple of years to be able to campaign and tour in those areas. And now my circuit is almost global, being able to do that. And this is an intangible company. You can't touch my company. It doesn't physically exist. You can't go to a fucking building and walk into this, into Adam Jang's booking company. It doesn't fucking work that way, right?
Right.
But as a concept and as a practice, it seems to exist and get me what I need. And it brings me to this point over here. And now we're also we're playing the Burapa Bike Week Festival, which is the biggest festival in Thailand, to my understanding. And it has it's like 50,000 people, and I've never played to 50,000 people in my life before. But all this other stuff, doing all these things, that leads to that. So as a musician, If you're the guy who has the unfortunate duty of having to run the band and make the band successful, as that guy, you cannot think in one direction. You got to think the 360 plan, and you got to think big, think huge. And your shit has to be good. Your music itself has to be honed. You have right. to practice your ass off. I sleep 5 hours a day, bro. Okay. It's
right.
I'm doing shit all day and night, right? I haven't sat and watched a full movie in a couple of years, because, like, when I'm watching a movie, I'll do my 25 Instagram comments on different people's things, right? And I'll do the post, and I'll reply to their shit. And you're supposed to do 20. Okay. Going back into social media, free lesson to social media, everybody who's watching this, okay? Instagram has a cap of how many engagements you can physically make in 1 hour. If you go over 50 actions in an hour, having a newer profile, you will get action blocked. That means you cannot like, you cannot comment, and you are fucked. Your engagement will go down. You have to start all over from the beginning. 50. Right. So that's 25 comments. That's 25, right? Plus doing all the likes. That's another 25. So if you like and comment on one post, that's two actions, right? So that's 50 actions in an hour. So for me to go through a 2-hour movie, I got to do that twice. And I do this probably 5 or 6 times a day when I have time. And I'll just go do it, like, just go through it. Boom, boom, boom. It now takes me about 15 minutes to go to do that. And leave real comments about stuff, right? You don't just say, like, cool beard, bro. Like, that's not going to get you anywhere, right? You're going to be like, right. Cool beard, bro. Did you trim that yourself? Or did you go somewhere? Right. Like that'll do it. Right. Like that. And then you got some interaction, you got some question and all that other stuff. And you get back to the motherfucker. Right. And then that's how you do it. When you put out your post, whoever commented on your post, you got to click on that motherfucker's page and you have to comment on his fucking shit too. Every time. It's a tiring thing. You have to give more than you get for this, right? Or you just pay a company to do it for you and that's it. Now, I don't only do Instagram. Here's the fucking problem. I also do Facebook and I got some stuff on YouTube, which sucks. So I don't only do 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I got to do another time on Facebook. Facebook's algorithm is different. You can do 100. So you got to do 100 fucking actions on Facebook. And Facebook won't action block you unless you go way over it. Like you do like a 500 in an hour and it makes it look like you're a robot.
Right.
So that's how it goes. And then there's TikTok, which I refuse to open because I don't have that much more free time in my fucking day. And when I open TikTok, it assaults me with things that I dislike that I try to keep away from myself for the whole time, right? Like the music and shit that comes out of TikTok is the most annoying shit to me in the fucking world, right? And it's just, the only thing you do is turn the volume all the way off on your phone. But if you don't do that and you just scroll through like you're supposed to do on Instagram, it's like a kid with Down syndrome yelling in your ear while a fax machine from the 90s is playing. And that's what fucking happens. It's like, you fucking retard, you. Right on. That comes out of this thing. So I can't take TikTok.
Right. So Adam, now you've been playing yet. Like you play so many different places. So you don't have a fixed lineup for the band, or how does it work?
Okay, so getting back to that point. Because I cannot fly two other guys with me, I can't pay for their tickets. I get different musicians in every place. I have been told countless times by a countless amount of musicians who have come through this band, they want to tour with me. They want to go do it. But when the time comes and I say, well, this is what the reality is, you got to pay out this much money. For your ticket, your visa, where you're going to live, your food. And there's no guarantee that we don't get screwed on the road. I've been screwed on the road many, many, many times. People say that they're going to pay you this much and they don't. So there's no guarantee, really. There's no contracts. There are in America, right? But in the majority of the world, there's no contracts for a band at this level, right? And we're playing little bars and shit. They're not going to give you that. Things go wrong. You could get sick. If you're in a place with no medical insurance, you're fucked. That's how it goes. People could steal your shit, right? Yeah. I'm not going to pay for your rent at home. I'm not going to pay for you to go and do that, right? Because I don't do that. So people have, and you know, people have responsibilities, right? They got, you know, either children or a wife or a job and all these things that they've worked for their whole lives. So it's unfair for me to even think about that, about them paying their way to come join a guy who they've known for a year or so, or followed on the internet for a couple of years, who writes all the songs and all this other stuff. I split the money equally on the road. So, you know, if it's like, you know, we play for $300 and it's a 3-piece band, I'll give each guy $100. Easy. If we sell merch and it's like, you know, the merch cost me $100 and we made $400, I'm going to take the $100 to cover the expenses. I'll split the rest of it. $100. And that's how I run the fucking thing. In terms of residual money from album sales, I don't get those. I don't have 10 billion streams on Spotify.
Right.
I don't have that. I'm not on a big label. No one's fucking distributing my album and making tons of money to be able to split that up. I consider that a merch sale. On like the physical CD, if we sell those, yeah, okay, I'll split that. But But other than that, right, I run it as fair as I can possibly run it. I run it more fair. I think it's more fair for them than it is for me in that situation, because I've worked my balls off and done all this stuff. I booked the shows. I organized the itinerary. I practice more. I practice 2 hours a day, just by myself. And then we have a 2-hour band practice. So, and do all the social media and do all this other stuff and still pay them equally. But even with that, they can't come with me to these different places. So I have to set up different backing bands in each place. It's the same show.
Right.
It's the same thing. The musicians I get have to be of the same caliber, if not better, than the last guy. And this is we're getting into something that could be, what is better, right? So that could be maybe something that people would argue about. But in terms of being able to play the song in time and in key, they have to be the same or better. In terms of like image and all these different things, of course, everyone looks different. So, you know, there's going to be some fluctuation with that. So that comes up to the name change. I'm basically, as I've explained this, all that stuff, I'm basically a solo artist that has a different backing band in each thing. I am basically Alice Cooper. For lack of better terms, I am basically Elvis in this situation, okay? And I got two other guys with me and stuff. So there was a lot of problems with finding my band on Google and YouTube and Spotify and shit, because in the last 6 or 7 years, there's been a ton of different companies and bands and DJs called Yeti. I wasn't aware of that in 2012 when I made this. I had no idea. Most of them didn't exist. A lot of them popped up in the last couple of years. So that was a big problem. I didn't copyright the name. I didn't know what copywriting was. I was stoned and drunk from 16 till a couple years ago. Okay. Like, so I wasn't aware of any of this shit. So I was like, all right, let's do this the right way. Now that we're putting out the new album, now that we're starting to get more traction, now's the time to do the brand change. So it's not even a total change. It's like a boob lift. It's adding something onto the fucking thing. So I said, Valhalla is cool, because that seems to be an ongoing premise in what is going on in the band, right? It's always been like, hail Odin, party tonight in Valhalla, all these things, right? These are cool concepts, the Norse religion concepts that I found when I was playing in Sweden for a little bit. And so I figured, okay, well, let's say Valhalla is my last name then. People call me Yeti already in bars and shit, right? I say my name's Adam, and I shake their hand afterwards like a bunch of times, but they call me Yeti already. So we just add that on. Now it's Yeti Valhalla, which is, you know, in terms of marketing, it looks cool on paper. I like how it sounds. I'm still getting used to it. It's only been a couple of months. But it seems to be working, and being able to type our name into Google now our shit comes up right away. And being able to tell people, hey, we're Yeti Valhalla, it comes up right away. So I think that's valuable.
Yeah, and I think adding that kind of badass, because it sort of enhances your I feel that it really enhances or complement what you have, right?
Thanks, bro. Yeah. Bro, kind of stuff. Yeah, it's that.
Yeah.
You want to like take a sword and like cut the head off of a pig or something, right? This is like
it's like Viking shit, right? All
yeah.
This Viking,
yeah. Eat the heart of a bear, you know, like do something fucked up like that. Like that's pretty cool.
Adam, so your music, I mean, you have, I know that you, as Yeti, you released like 4 albums, and then now tell me about your music. And I know you have a very new single as well.
It's changed quite drastically. It started out as basically an attempt to make modern classic rock. And that is a failed attempt. You can never bring back a trend that was cool a long time ago in music successfully and have that sustained. There's like bands, like I forgot that band that sounded like Led Zeppelin and they won a Grammy. They were cool for a little bit, right?
Greta Van Fleet, right?
I don't remember what it was called, but it was like, yeah, some band sounded like Led Zeppelin and they won a Grammy. So I was like, okay, great. But that didn't make a resurgence or anything. What you have to do, unfortunately, is you don't, you know, an artist does not conform to social trends, but to be socially relevant, you must do your version of what is socially relevant in the genre of music that you play. So I just had to get heavier. That was all it was. It was just like taking that cool rock music and making it into metal. Now I still sing in what I consider a rock singer's vocal range. I don't do the death metal thing, and I don't try to talk like the weird monster from Lord of the Rings. They say, bah, 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 bah. Like, I don't do the black metal thing, and I don't do the Cookie Monster thing. I sing like, you know, those old school awesome players. I put double kicks into it. I made it a heavier thing. I changed the in terms of musical nerd stuff. I went from doing straight pentatonic, which sounds old, it sounds dated, into some different kind of chord progressions. I use the harmonic minor now. I use different things. I use Egyptian modes and stuff. I use like the Lydian mode and to compose a newer, more up-to-date rock. That's what I'm going for, at least, right? People call it metal. I still consider it rock music, right? Like I think Black Sabbath is a rock band. I think Black Sabbath sounds like, I think Metallica now is a rock band for sure. There's, but people call it metal, right? Like, so the new album reflects that. The other three that I put out, that was still trying to bring out modern classic rock. That's what I was trying to do for a long time. And I was successful to a degree in Asia. I made a career out of doing that. So it's not worthless. It's not like I gave up on it or anything, but I wanted this to get into bigger stages around the world, and I wanted to be more socially relevant. Now, if I really wanted to only be socially relevant, I would have become a rapper or a DJ or something like that. I would have done that. So I'm not totally selling out or anything. I still found an artistic way around this. I used everything that I had learned in music and in writing to be able to compose and write this album in such a way. It doesn't sound like it sure as fuck doesn't sound like it was made by 16-year-olds in 2021. It sounds like it was made by an older guy for damn sure. And that's what it is. So in terms of music, it's a heavy, heavy rock record, dude, that people can hopefully enjoy. It's if we were to compare it in terms of influences, let's say the first couple albums are more influenced by like Aerosmith and AC/DC and Van Halen and I think and Kiss, things like that, right? Let's say the new album is still influenced by those things in small different ways. But it's also influenced by like Pantera and Metallica, Slayer to a degree, and all these heavier Judas Priest, these heavier bands that were a little after that era of music.
Right. So Adam, what are you looking forward to the rest of the year and 2022?
Oh, dude, I just hope they stop the COVID stuff. I that's all I want. All right. Like that's I have everything else handled. I'm going to be with the new label in Spain. We're going to release it on their thing, Crazy Sandwich. We're going to be playing this big festival if COVID just fucks off. I got on to these different shows in England if COVID fucks off. I got this big tour being organized by by a very, very big booker in America, if COVID fucks off. So, you know, this, I've been struggling and I've been working and making money in the music business for 17 years. And I'm now at the point where I could get everything I want out of it. But we have this COVID thing happen, right? I want the big America tour. I want to play in front of thousands of people. I can do that in here and I can do it in Mexico now too. I can go and fucking, I can play festivals in Germany if I wanted to now at this point. I just need to get that done. All I want is to be able to say, I'm on tour in America. I'm on a big bus. I'm opening up for this asshole and I'm headlining for these guys, right? I'm doing all this stuff. I'm playing in front of thousands of people in this place and over here in this place. I'm on the same show as Bumblefoot in Thailand. Bumblefoot's playing the same fucking thing. That's cool, right? So I got, you know, if COVID fucks off. So it's taken me this long to build all this shit and get to this point. And I've worked very hard for a really long time. And I'm going to have to keep working harder for an even longer time to sustain that. But we got it all there. So all I'm looking forward to is COVID to fuck off. Had that fucked off, we'd be having this conversation from a bus right now.
Right.
Had that fucked, right. You know, it's a rough time, man. How about you? Yeah. What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward. Adam, I used to, before the pandemic, the only thing I did was basically go to concerts. So you can see there all the concert stuff.
There's a lot of them, yeah.
Yeah, so I used to go to probably 60 plus concerts a year, every year. 2019, awesome. I went to 61 shows in Singapore, Bangkok, Australia, and all these places. And in 2020, I could go only 8 shows. Only 8. 60 plus to 8. And I'm there. But nice, good thing happened is that because of this, I actually started this podcast and I started talking to artists and I'm
cool.
Finding out a lot of new artists and I'm helping them to promote their story and it's a plus thing, but I'm really looking forward to go to a live show and, you know, go at the barricade and, you know, with the people elbow to elbow and, you know, sweat and, you know, headbanging, mosh pit. Yeah. And Adam, I'm looking forward that in the future, maybe you can come and play in the Philippines or I can see you in Thailand because it's just a one flight, just like, you know,
3-hour flight. Yeah, it'd be great to fucking see you. That'd be good stuff. Do you know any promoters in the Philippines?
Oh, yes. I also have my own promotion, which I started, but I had to let you sort of put the plans down because of the COVID. So I started bringing bands from Singapore and, you know, those bands here.
Cool.
Sort of an intimate, smaller promotion, but my promotion is actually sort of backed by a set of hardcore fans. So they just want to support the bands and they want to see the bands that they want to see. So we started bringing the artists that we want to see and also like make sure we treat the artists well. We make sure we pay them and we give them the best experience. And all the bands I bought here, they said that this was the best experience they had as a tour to another country.
Great, brother.
Awesome. So yes, we can do something in the future once all these things are, you know.
Yeah, once it goes away. Yeah.
So Adam, what's your message to the viewers of this video and people who's going to listen to this conversation?
Thank you very much for checking out this awesome show. This guy really has a passion for music in general, and that is something that should not be looked down upon or considered less than what it really is, because people like this is what makes the music industry work. People who have passion and care about music is what makes the music industry work. And when we have more people like this and we support people like this and watch his podcast and share the podcast, then the music industry thrives and grows. When we do the opposite, it kills it.
Right. Adam, anybody you want to shout out to?
Fuck everyone. I'm kidding. No, I'm kidding. Shout out. No, so I'd like to thank my three cats. I'd like to say hi to my three cats, Shira, Yuji, and Basil. I'd like to show my, there's my sock puppet. There's Jerry, my sock puppet. It's like, right. Fucking, yeah, I got this guy. All right, so that was about, I don't need to edit that, right? But that's about good. We're releasing our new album in soon. Right now, COVID's just screwed up production, so I don't know when I'm going to get the physical CDs back from Spain. I'm just still waiting for that. Our new music video will be out at the same time. I can't release it until I have the CD to sell with it. So we're just sitting on our butts right here, and please just stick around with us while we get through this ridiculous time. We hope that you're all very safe and healthy. We hope that you're financially stable, or as stable as can be during this screwed up time. If you have some extra means to help other people, please help other people. It doesn't take much. A bag of rice, a bottle of water makes a world of a difference to people who do not have those things.
Right. You mentioned the bucket of chicken and the coke, right? Like,
yeah. Give him a bucket of chicken and a coke. It makes him feel better. You can get someone to work half your tour. Put the bag of chicken. And
Adam, tell everyone how they can follow you and listen to your music.
You can just type in Yeti Valhalla into Google and pop all up there. YouTube, Yeti Official, or you just type in Yeti Valhalla into YouTube. It'll pop right up. Facebook is Yeti Jams. I have not figured out how to be able to change that over to Yeti Valhalla, but it is what it is. Yeti Jams. You just type in Yeti into Facebook. You look for this handsome guy and you click on that freaking thing over there. Instagram is Yeti Valhalla. So it's at Yeti Valhalla on Instagram. And we don't have Twitter. And I have a TikTok, but I'm never going to look at it. So there's no point in fucking clicking on that for me. Websites, YetiValhalla.com. We are endorsed and sponsored by Roman Anton and Kingpin in Bangkok, Thailand. My endorsement with Ho Amplifiers, Ho Electronics in Vancouver, BC. But I think he's dead now. I haven't talked to him in a really long time. He was really old back then, so he might be dead. But that's our amplifiers. You can hear our stuff all over our records coming out real soon. Thank you very much, everybody. God bless. Have a great day.
Right. Adam, I really enjoy this conversation. Thanks for joining. And thanks for, you know, when I reach out to you, thanks for accepting this and coming on the show. And looking forward to, you know, your new album and all the best with your journey.
Thank you very much, brother. Thank you very much for having me on your show. An honor and a privilege. I hope we can do it again, and I hope to see you in the Philippines or Thailand anytime.
Right. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Adam.
No problem. Rock on.